Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how's it going?
I'm fantastic today, Adam. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Another week, and we are one step closer to something in the DC Universe. What's the closest thing to...
I forgot about our countdown clock.
Oh, well... All right. Well,
okay, we'll do it for next episode.
Okay,
we'll
but even episode. Though you can't count down, what's the next thing coming out? What's the next thing we can look forward to?
Well, I mean, there's a lot to look forward to just in general. Before that. I mean, when we talk about comics, when we talk about everything, but the next movie, because that's what we said we did the countdown clock for, is Freedom Fighters: The Ray, which is coming out. Well, I guess I could actually do the countdown clock in my head because it's pretty easy on this one. It's 17 days away.
Oh, good.
Because it comes out on August 28th. So, yeah. So I didn't even need to do the countdown clock on this one. I just was able to do it in my head. So
very nice. Very nice. Well done.
Thank you.
So,
comic recommendations?
Yes, that's what I was because you mentioned. Comic books, so
yes, I did.
So let's go along with it. What is your comic recommendation this week?
Well, it is not a Tom King Batman week, it's not as predictable as it is usually for me, but you might still be able to predict this one, which is Catwoman number 2, the second issue of the new Catwoman solo title by Joelle Jones. It's phenomenal. Following up from the first issue, what I really love about this this run, just two issues in so far, but both this and the Cold Days arc in Batman, which was my on our last episode, there's an episode in between because Ryan and I did our Teen Titans Go to the Movies review, where I had a different comic book recommendation, but I had recommended Batman number 52 before, which explores Bruce in the aftermath of issue number 50. And so Catwoman, her solo title is also exploring, Selina in the aftermath of issue number 50. And as much as it breaks my Batcat heart, I love how both the Batman and Catwoman books right now are exploring how lost Bruce and Selina are without each other. And it's heartbreaking, but it's also so beautifully done in both books. So I'm loving that. This new villain, Reyna, that Joelle Jones has created is so creepy. I'm loving her. Can't wait to find out more about her, but she's really creepy. In my head, when I read her, I like hear Holland Taylor's voice. So I don't know if that's just me or if anybody else has that. but anyway, if they ever brought Reyna to live action, I think Holland Taylor would probably be good to play her. Or animated if to voice her.
Sure.
Anyway, that just occurred to me. I don't know why I think that, but anyway, that's what it just reminds me of. And this whole mystery first of all, there's an awesome action scene at the beginning of this issue, but then this whole mystery around what's going on with these duplicate Catwomen, I guess you could say. Really cool
imposters
stuff.
Is another
What's that? Imposters. Thank you. That's the word I was really looking for. Thank you, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course Joelle Jones's art, just breathtaking, and the Art Germ variant covers as well. There's obviously for the first two issues he's done, but then also they released the third issue's variant cover as well. So I've seen that. My goodness, his art is incredible. So anyway, all the art, both Joelle Jones interiors and her covers, and then the variant covers, amazing art. So Catwoman number 2, people, if you haven't already, pick that up because this solo series is off to such a fantastic start.
Yeah, I actually read the book this week.
And what did you think?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked specifically, I don't know if you noticed the nod to Batman Returns, where Catwoman was interrogating one of the imposters, and she sort of got on top of her, much like she did.
Oh yes,
Batman
yes,
and Batman
yes.
Returns. Yeah,
I do remember that now. Yes.
So that stuck out to me as a notable moment. So yeah, but I enjoyed the book, the issue. That was a good recommendation. For my recommendation, I'm gonna keep the keep a theme going, and you'll see why in a second. I recently purchased and read the graphic novel Supergirl Being Super.
Hey, Joelle Jones, there you go.
Yeah. and I really, really enjoyed this book. I'm not going to give too much away because I'm planning on doing a written review for Revenge of the Fans, so I'll keep it brief. What I like about it is several things. First of all, it is Kara in high school and dealing with real, you know, teenage issues. Whereas, you know, in the show, she's in her mid-20s, so that, you know, that ship, the high school ship has sailed for the show purposes. And in the current...
Except for the Midvale episodes.
Well, yeah, but those are flashbacks.
Or episodes so far. I think I said episodes plural just because,
yeah,
I'm really hoping they keep doing those.
Yeah, but the current age of the character in that series is mid-20s, so...
Right.
And it's not a prevalent plot point, being a teenager, but so in this book was very much centered on that, which I enjoyed. I enjoyed the fact about how they dealt with her and her understanding of herself, and how they revealed all that. So that was cool. There is a The villain and how it tied into Lex Luthor was very interesting to me. And just the fact that, you know, Supergirl struggled. Like, she had a real big issue to work through. And I think that is something that not even the current, except for the current issue, because I haven't read it yet, but the current comic run up until this point hasn't put her through the sort of trauma that she has to deal with in this book. And also, the really cool thing for me was the way they worked in the Superman cameo into this book. I thought it was really interesting and a cool way of doing it. And this is actually something I'll pick up on when we discuss our movie news, because it ties in. So I'll discuss on that more. And also, just in general, the art by Joelle Jones, I think it's phenomenal. Her artwork here is great. And so, yeah, I really was impressed with this book. And so I give it the highest recommendation. So definitely pick it up, and after the news portion of this episode, you may be so inclined to pick it up. So, but yeah, that's my recommendation for the week.
Can never go wrong with Joelle Jones' art.
I'll concur with that, yeah.
Alrighty, well, let's move into our news. First up, we got our first image of Pedro Pascal from Wonder Woman 1984. We don't know who he's playing yet. But it's this picture of him on a TV screen. So sort of following up, we got a picture of Wonder Woman staring at all those TV screens, Dark Knight style or Watchmen style.
Yeah.
but this is picking up on that thread. He's on a TV screen. He's in the back of a car in a fancy suit. I heard the DC on screen guys describe him as looking like Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor here. And I definitely get that vibe. It looks like my guess, like just based on his picture, is that this is some sort of TV commercial or something that he's in. And he's like that's just the vibe I picked up from it. But anyway, it's very interesting to think about, you know, who he might be playing, what role he might have in this movie, because it's been very mysterious up to this point. But very cool to get our first image of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that we still don't. I mean, it's not unfortunate because I think Unfortunate is the wrong word. I think it's important to the plot that we'd be surprised who he is. So, but we still don't know who he is, and the picture doesn't reveal much. But it's nice to any official glimpse that we get of filming is nice, because it's something that the director and producers want us to see. That gives us a little taste without spoiling anything. So I'm all for those kind of pictures. And I like it if he was playing Maxwell Lord personally.
That would be cool.
However, I think it's going to be something to do with the gods. He's going to be another relative of Wonder Woman. That's my theory, but we'll see.
Lord would be cool because I've been missing him on Supergirl. Yeah. Because we haven't seen him since season one in live action. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah. So it's good. The production is chugging along, and can't wait to get more official info and also the first teaser or trailer or whatever ends up being the case. I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I echo those sentiments. Moving on to Joker, Mark Maron has been cast in the film, and according to sources, this is coming from Variety, he'll be portraying an agent on Robert De Niro's talk show who plays a part in booking Phoenix's character and eventually causing him to go mad and become the clown prince of crime. That sounds so intriguing to me. In terms of Maron himself, I gotta be honest, I never even heard of this guy. But then I looked him up and I noticed he has been in one thing which I've seen, which is Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, which that movie was hilarious. I don't remember Maron in it, but given how much I love that movie, I probably liked him in it. I can't really comment on the actor too much besides saying that, but I'm very intrigued by this role and yeah.
You know, continuing a theme from last week, you throw out movie titles that I've never even heard of.
dude, you've got to see this movie. It is hilarious. It's with Zac Efron and Adam Devine. And, it's really funny.
You mentioned Zac Efron. If Andy DiGenova from Holy Backcast hears this episode, he's going to start, you know, getting excited over Zac Efron as Nightwing, because I think that's his top choice for Nightwing.
It is. And I really dig that choice, by the way.
Yeah, but by the time Warner Brothers gets around to it, he may have aged himself out of the role. So we'll see. But I have no. I mean, to be fair, I haven't really looked at his IMDb, so I don't know if I've seen anything with him in it. But I don't really have a familiarity with the actor. Mark Maron, we're talking about, not Zac Efron. I know who Zac Efron is. But, you know, the idea, first of all, anytime what I do get a sense of him is that he's a good character actor. And anytime you can add quality character actors to a film, you know, it's a good sign. But in saying that, the concept of him being the agent who books people on Robert De Niro's talk show, that whole talk show scenario, makes me wonder if they're going to take a piece of, you know, a scene or inspiration from The Dark Knight Returns, when Joker appears on a talk show and then poisons everybody in the friggin' audience. So, again, I don't know if it'll be an exact replication of the comic scene, because this is part of the process that leads Joaquin Phoenix Joker insane.
And we still haven't gotten Bartholomew Wolper cast yet.
Yeah, but either, yeah. So I don't think it'll be I don't think it'll be an exact duplicate of the scene from the book, but I think certainly they could take some nods and inspiration from it.
Sure.
So, yeah, I'm intrigued. And look, that film is going definitely going for an R rating, because they've released a casting notice that they need women for a strip club scene who are comfortable with being topless. So If there was any ever, if there was ever any doubt that this film was going for an R rating, there you go. It's pretty much confirmed that that's what they're targeting. So yeah, but I'm intrigued by the whole. I've been intrigued every step of the way. So, bring it on! I can't wait till. And by the way, I've read articles that confirm that the film will start filming in New York on September 22nd. So that is not that far away.
No, it is not. I can't wait. I echo your sentiments on that as well. Because, yeah, I'm so excited for this film. So, yep, yep. Well, another film that we have to look forward to now is a live-action Supergirl movie that is currently being written by Oren Uziel, whose name I'm probably butchering, but second of all, who co-wrote the screenplay for 22 Jump Street, which is a movie that I love. So that's my experience with him, so that has me excited, because I do love that film. But this is very, very exciting, because I've been waiting for us to get Supergirl in the DCEU ever since that Man of Steel tie-in comic that confirmed she was the one in that open pod we see in Man of Steel. And so I've been hoping we'd see her in the DCEU, and then now it looks like, I'm going to get that wish granted, I guess you could say, because, this is very exciting. I'm really excited to get another Supergirl film. What is it now? 34 years since her first appearance.
84 was the film?
84, yeah, so 34 years ago. But yeah. So
yeah, it was the year that Wonder Woman is taking place in, right? So
that's true. That is very true. now that I think about it,
if there's a Supergirl movie poster in that mall scene,
that would be an awesome Easter egg. Or I was even thinking like that TV screen.
You see Helen Slater in the Superman, but like, she's been like, wait a minute.
I was even thinking
the multiverse.
I was even thinking that TV footage, that all the TV monitors, if one of them had Supergirl on one at one point, that would be really.
Yeah, cool. That would be a little bit. Now we're getting into Fox X-Men continuity territory here. So yeah.
But no, in terms of this Supergirl movie, anyway, I am so excited for it. Like I said, I've been waiting a long time for this, and I'm excited about the name attached to who's writing it. So yeah, this is awesome news in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's regarding the writer. I know a lot of people will say, oh, but isn't anybody worried? You know, I had somebody on our Facebook page that said, well, this guy wrote the, first of all, I like the 22 Jump Street movie. I like 21 Jump Street as well. But mm-hmm. That's besides the point.
Me too.
But somebody voiced concern because he's the writer behind the Cloverfield Paradox, or the one that appeared on Netflix, whatever the hell that was called, the latest one, you know, the Cloverfield movie.
I didn't see it, but
a lot of people didn't like that, so you know, there's somebody expressed concern, and all I can point to in terms of that is that. Every writer's got a dud in their filmography. I mean, you know, all you have to do is look no further than Akiva Goldsman, who wrote, obviously, Batman and Robin, but yet managed to write, I think it was it A Beautiful Mind?
Yeah, he did.
So.
But Batman and Robin is not a dud, Adam.
Well, 99.9% of the world agrees with me. No, I'll say 99.8% of the world agrees with me. Whereas you are part of the 0.2%, you and our guest that we had on the Batman and Robin podcast, which people haven't heard yet, so you two are the only two people that don't think it's a dud.
Hey, Ryan Huelsman.
But he admits it's a dud. He can like it, but admit it's a dud. So there's a difference. whereas you generally enjoy that movie, and so does Brittany, I think it was.
My buddy Sark Sarkeesian.
Well, All right, 99.7%. How about that? There we go. but still, either way, my point is you can write a bad movie and also write a good movie. It's like, you know, not everybody's going to bat 1,000 every single time. And who knows what other circumstances, you know, were involved in the Cloverfield paradox. You know, there's also direction. I mean, there's so many things that have to go right for a movie to be good. One of them is, yes, obviously the script, but there are so many, you know, ingredients that have to work to make things come together. But in terms of an idea of a Supergirl movie itself, I think it's a smart move, because look, first of all, anytime. We're living in a post Wonder Woman world now, where the Wonder Woman movie came out, did gangbusters at the box office, got, you know, critical acclaim, and so making a Supergirl movie on that premise alone is a good business decision. The other reason I think it's very smart is because if you look at the Batman corner of the DC Films universe, you know, we have you know, Birds of Prey that's going to start filming January 15th. You've got possibly Gotham City Sirens being resurrected as an idea. We've got the Joker. we've got the Joker Elseworlds story that's going to start, you know, as I said, in September. You know, we've got Warner Brothers developing a Nightwing movie. So, you know, Batgirl is being written by Christina Hodson, the woman that wrote Bumblebee, and is now also co-wrote Birds of Prey, or wrote Birds of Prey. So clearly, Warner Brothers is building and developing the Batman universe in terms of, you know, the Bat family of characters. They're developing movies surrounding those characters. It makes sense to do the same with Superman's world, you know, and starting with Supergirl is a good choice, because, you know, I think the Hollywood Reporter ran a piece where they were saying, well, you know, if you get Supergirl going, You can then build out to other Metropolis-based characters, so you could eventually get, you know, potentially Kal-El, Superboy, right? Potentially an actually good Steel movie. Imagine that, with an actual actor instead of Shaquille O'Neal, right? You know, that'd be nice. But once you start, you know, if Joker's successful, maybe they can do a Lex Luthor, Man of Steel type Elseworld story. You know, based off that book, which would be interesting. But I think it's a smart move to keep the option open of developing the Superman family of characters, and starting with Supergirl, I think is a smart call. And I've been hearing from people, that, you know, the scoopers and such, that the idea that's at the it's first of all, it's very, very early stages, so nothing is set in stone. But what I'm hearing is the intention is for Supergirl to actually be a teenager. So we're looking at potentially actresses from the age range of 16 to 22 here. Once it comes time to casting, and again, provided that during the script writing process, things don't change, because, like, remember, Matt Reeves at one point was looking for somebody in their mid-30s, and now he's looking for somebody between 20 to 30, so things could change. But the idea right now is that it'd be an actual teenage Supergirl, which is, if you go back to the books, was the intention, right? So, and I think it's smart, because if you look at DC Films, currently, they don't have a teenaged superhero in the lineup. And I think that'd be an interesting route to go with Supergirl. And I also think you could definitely take elements, not having not read it, you can take elements of Supergirl being super if you go the teenage Supergirl route.
And also, there's always, like, whenever I hear teenage superhero route or a superhero movie in high school or anything, I always think back to Smallville, of course, because I feel like that set a template for that. So, and you know how much I adore Smallville, so them going that route excites me a lot. It's one of the reasons I'm so excited about the Stargirl TV series is because, should I call it a TV series? I don't know if I should call it a TV series. Streaming service series.
Well, I mean, you could technically watch it on a TV if you have the capability. So, yeah. That's true.
Okay. Well, anyway, the Stargirl series, I guess I'll just say.
Yeah. Live action series. There you go.
Yes. Exactly. That's one of the reasons I'm so excited about that is because it's going to be set in a high school. And so that just – and like I brought up the Midvale episode of Supergirl earlier – and how much I love that. Just like I love, I brought up before in this show, the pre Flashpoint Blue Beetle comic book run, which is one of my favorite comic book runs of all time. There's a lot. I think they took a lot of inspiration from Smallville for that in terms of because that was, you know, it was Jaime Reyes in high school. Mm. So I love, I love that, and I love the idea. Like just thinking about it now. The idea of a Supergirl movie set in high school, and I just, especially with Supergirl, I mean, yes, she was on Smallville, but, you know, the connection with, you know, the Superman mythology there, I mean, I just get, I just can't stop thinking about Smallville, and so that is one element of this movie that would really excite me if that is indeed the route that they go with it.
And I think, I mean, and just in terms of, you know, first of all, I'm not gonna, I want to send people over because I think it's a great read. Revenge of the Fans, they've done a hypothetical, you know, like not a hypothetical, but a casting sort of a wish list of from a various age ranges that of people that they think would be good. So definitely read that. Go check that out to you, Jordan, as well as the rest of our listeners. Go check that out. I think it's a cool list, and I would actually, I mean, without spoiling their list, I would be A-okay with anybody on that list if that was the case. But again, it's way too early to talk casting. But if I was in charge, if I was writing, which I'm not, but if I was, I would definitely take portions of – again, I would do what Warner Bros. Has been typically doing, is taking elements of different runs from different comics. So what I would do is take elements of Being Super with elements of Jeff Loeb's Supergirl run and potentially a villain from the New 52 era, because in the New 52, spoilers, Zor-El actually becomes Cyborg Superman. And sort of a villain for Supergirl. So I think that could be interesting. So I would take bits and pieces from each of those three continuities, those three eras. So that's my take. But we'll see where they go. But in terms of the
Supergirl TV show took another villain from the New 52 run with Rain, and look how amazing that turned out. So
yeah, but I just think I just think it'd be fascinating if, you know, Cyborg Supergirl, but the antagonist is actually or was her father.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
That would be very tense. But in that same token, you could also do Brainiac, because think about it, Kara taking on Brainiac, who. Not to say that Superman taking on Brainiac isn't cool, because it is, but I think Brainiac being a antagonist for Supergirl is even more hard-hitting and powerful in the sense, because, and here's why, because she actually lived on Krypton.
Yeah.
She actually experienced her homeworld. So her coming in to have to face the being that destroyed or took part in the destruction of said homeworld, I think is a very, very dramatic and tense story potential. So.
Oh yeah, and you look, Injustice 2's done that. Yeah. And
and she was a standout in that. She was a standout in that game. So. Mm-hmm. I dig it. I can't wait. I can't wait till we get going here.
Amen to that. Yeah. question for you, because this is just something that I was thinking about with regards to this news. Is it premature to get my hopes up that this could be a sign that WB is finally relaxing their rules about, you know, their edicts about characters appearing in live action TV and movies simultaneously? Because when Superman appeared on the Supergirl TV show, you know, I got my hopes up that their edict had finally been lifted. But then they changed their mind, it looks like. And then they told Arrow they couldn't use Deathstroke anymore after that two-parter this year. So I don't know. It was just something that came to my mind. Like maybe this is the end of that.
Look, first of all, okay, let me, there are two things here.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I personally think it depends on the character.
Okay.
I think it goes on a character by character basis. That's the
one. We know that's the case. Yeah. I mean, look at Flash. Yeah. I mean, Flash is the big example.
Yeah. And then now Supergirl would be another aspect of that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, these rules were put in place before Walter Hamada really took over. This you can't use this, you can't use that, etc., etc. So
was he in place? Now I'm just trying to remember the timeline of things. Was he in place before the death? No, because he would have been after the Deathstroke two-parter this year of Arrow.
Yeah,
right?
for sure. Yeah.
Or last year.
So
so
he was installed. After the fact. So we don't know.
That's a good point.
What his stance on the policy is. But you know, so we'll have to wait and see. But I think, like I said, it depends on the character. Yeah. And then look at this point, they're not going to outright flat, you know, cancel Supergirl just because the movie's in development. I think.
Yeah, of course.
Look. Because I know people were asking me, well, what happens with Supergirl now, the show? And I said, nothing.
The Flash. Yeah. The Flash didn't get canceled once the Flash movie went in development.
And you got to think about it this way. Like, if, let's assume, hypothetically, that the earliest a Supergirl film is on screen is 2021, right?
Well, yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
By that point, Supergirl could have ended its run anyway, the show, so it wouldn't matter.
I hope not, though.
No. But look, at some point, these shows are gonna have to end, so you know they can't go on forever. Even though Supernatural looks like it will, but it, you know, logically, they can't go on forever, and so we could be in a scenario where. You know, it could very well be wrapping up just as the Supergirl movie is about to launch. And, you know, so it's not an issue. It hasn't been for The Flash. I don't know why it would start being an issue now. So for anybody that's worried about that, put it out of your mind. That's what I could say. But I am 100%.
Don't worry.
I am
about a thing.
Yeah, please don't say.
Because we're getting a Supergirl movie.
Yeah, please don't say.
And the show's gonna keep going.
You're gonna decrease our audience members by singing, so please refrain from that. But yeah, so I'm super excited about the pun intended. Excited about this announcement. I think it's a good move, and I love the fact that Warner Bros. And DC are really pushing their female. Library of characters. I think it's great.
Now give me Catwoman in the DCEU.
I think it's coming.
I hope so.
Just a matter of time.
But yes, super exciting. I pun very much intended with regards to the Supergirl news.
Yeah.
Well, moving on to some more, actually, another female-centered DCEU movie, which is Birds of Prey. Well, the villain for Birds of Prey has been revealed, and it's very exciting.
And this is coming from The Wrap, right?
This is coming from The Wrap. They had the exclusive, Humberto Gonzalez, and that would be that Black Mask is going to be the main villain of Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
And this is so exciting. I have been waiting a very long time to be getting Black Mask in live action. Yeah, I mean, I don't really think it counts. We got his father on Gotham, so I don't really think that counts. But
His father is now writing Suicide Squad 2. So go figure.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. I am so excited to actually be getting Black Mask, though, in live action in this movie. I've been excited ever since David Ayer said that he was maybe going to be he was teasing Black Mask as the villain of Gotham City Sirens. I was excited about that. And now I'm excited that he's going to be the villain. Maybe in addition to being the villain of Gotham City Sirens. I mean, we'll see. Maybe they'll do some connective tissue there and do something like that. But in any case, I'm so excited about this. In my opinion, Black Mask is one of the most underrated Batman villains. I've loved him ever since I was first introduced to him on my favorite animated series, The Batman, as a kid, where he was played by now Gotham and Black Lightning star James Remar, who just gave such a terrifying portrayal of the character in that. So I am so excited to see him being brought to life in live action soon. So I think this is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that I really like the character of Black Mask. There was a lot of storyline actually pre-New 52 that featured him in the comics. I forget what it was called. It was something War on something was the subheading of the run that ran across some of the Batman titles. That was very interesting. Visually, I think he's an imposing character, but it also makes sense in terms of, you know, an antagonist that would be appropriate for the Birds of Prey, right? I think.
War Games, Adam.
War Games, War Games, that's when, yeah. Thank you. And I remember reading that, and I really liked that storyline. So, so the villain makes sense for the Birds of Prey to fight as a team. It's a lot better than, you know, a belly dancing enchantress, so I'm on board with that, I like the character, and I think it's high time that he gets a live action appearance. And the beauty of this goes back to what I was saying about Supergirl, is the beauty of building out the Batman world and creating movies about that involve the Bat family of characters. Is that we can get villains that it would probably take forever to get to in a solo Bat if they were just doing solo Batman movies, right? Because by the time they get to by the time that you think they get to Black Mask in an actual Batman movie, we're talking about what, maybe potentially 10 years or more, right? So at least we're getting them here, and I think that the strategy, it goes back to the strategy being smart. I've also found out that Birds of Prey, again, I said we'll film specifically January 15th. We will start filming in Los Angeles because they were awarded a tax break to film there. And that it, from what I've heard, will carry a budget of $75 million. So that's what I'm hearing. And think about this.
Let's just hope Constantine's done battling all those monsters in Los Angeles by the time they start filming.
Well, since Los Angeles is Vancouver in the DCCW, I'm sure we're good. I love the idea. I can't wait to see Black Mask, and I can't wait to get some confirmed casting on not only for him, but for the actual Birds of Prey. But I am
absolutely
100% excited because on January 15th or shortly thereafter, we will likely get our first picture of not only Harley Quinn back as, or Margot Robbie, excuse me, back as Harley Quinn, but we'll probably also, I hope we get, Warner Brothers should learn their lesson, that we should get official pictures of the Birds of Prey. So that sounds exciting. I can't wait.
I'm with you. Alrighty, moving on. We got a bunch of movie posters because for all of the upcoming DCU AOM films that have been announced, we got movie posters for them all. So we got one for Reign of the Superman.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a shot. It's a shot of the Daily Planet, and you sort of see Metropolis behind it. They're very simplistic posters, but I think they work really, really well. Just I really love the simplicity of them. So yeah, we got that. I don't know how you want to go about it. I don't know if you want to comment on it. You don't.
Explain all four, and then I'll tell you my favorite. How about that? My two favorites.
That's,
how about that?
That sounds good. Yeah. That sounds good. Then there's the Batman Hush one, which is similar, except instead of Metropolis, it's Gotham City, and we see bats flying through the sky. Mm. Then we've got the Justice League versus the Fatal Five one, which it looks like they might actually not be going with that title. They might be going with it just calling it Justice League Fatal Five, which is interesting because that's what it says on this poster. So perhaps they've changed the name since the movie was announced. But this one is of the Moon, and it's got the classic watchtower, the Moon Watchtower that I think was featured in Grant Morrison's JLA run.
And then also in the animated series, of course.
Well, in the animated series, it wasn't on the Moon.
There was the Watchtower in the animated series, in the Justice League animated series.
Yeah, they had the Watchtower, but it wasn't on the Moon.
But it was in space, being
on the Moon is.
No, but it was in space, though. I'm saying though.
I mean, it was the base in the DCAU. It was the base in The Batman, my favorite animated series. It was the base in. It's been the base in the comics up until recently when Scott Snyder's run started and they changed it to the Hall of Justice. But here's the interesting thing to point out about this here, Adam. Is in the DCU AOM New 52 inspired shared universe, their base has been the Hall of Justice. Mm-hmm. And however, if you remember in Batman Bad Blood, there was the Watchtower Initiative thing where they had that prototype Watchtower that big set piece at the end of the movie took place on. Here's my question. There's two things this poster could suggest. It could either suggest that this movie is out of continuity, because we still haven't gotten confirmation on that yet, or it could suggest that we're getting the Watchtower in the DCU AOM New 52 inspired shared universe for the first time. So it'll be very interesting to see which one of those is the case.
I personally think it's going to be outside of continuity. It just might.
And why is that? Just out of curiosity, have you heard
something? I haven't heard anything. I'm just about that? No, I haven't heard anything. Nobody's told me any secret information. It's just a theory I have that it'll be outside of the main continuity.
I've just asked, is there any basis for that theory? Like, do you have
just the idea of when it was first announced and I looked at the list and they gave you a brief little description, I thought, well, okay, if one is going to be clearly set outside, I'd pick that one because I think you can do Hush with the established DCU AOM continuity makes a lot more sense. We obviously know that the Reign of the Superman is gonna be part of the established continuity.
Mm-hmm.
The only other option would be the Wonder Woman one, and we're not sure yet, so we'll have to wait and see. But I just think of the four, that one stands out to me as the one that would be most likely out of continuity, just personal.
Interesting, because I've been leaning towards that one being in continuity, simply for the fact that usually the second one they do of the year, which this one will be, usually the second one is still in continuity. Yeah. And the reason I actually think Wonder Woman Bloodlines is the one that's most likely to be out of continuity, and the reason for that is because usually the final one of the year is out of continuity, which this will be, and I think there's a chance that they'll actually make it a sequel to the 2009 Wonder Woman film and follow up the cheetah tease from the end of that. So that's just a theory I had there. But then again, there is the fact that there it's called Wonder Woman Bloodlines, and the first arc of her New 52 run was called Wonder Woman Blood, and given that the shared universe is heavily inspired by the New 52, there is that sort of is in the back of my mind. Maybe they'll base it partially on that and will set in continuity. I don't know, just speculation there. But that's a good segue, because then the final poster we got is from Wonder Woman Bloodlines, and it's got, well, I don't even know how to describe this one. It's like some sort of ancient ruins.
Well, it looks like Themyscira, probably, right?
Probably, yeah, probably Themyscira, and then we've got these, like, I guess, unicorns?
Well, no, isn't it Pegasus? Isn't it the horse?
Pegasus. Pegasus. Yeah, unicorns are what we're getting on Legends of Tomorrow this season, I guess.
Apparently, yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, there's that one. So yes, Adam, tell me what your favorite one is, and then I'll tell you what my favorite is.
Well, I have two favorites. The Wonder Woman one.
Okay.
Again, just because of the Themyscira and ruins and Pegasus and all that in the shadows, that looks kind of cool.
Sure.
Actually, very cool, not kind of cool. And then Hush. The Gotham skyline, it gets me so excited. Just knowing that Hush is finally coming, and with the bats, you know, flying in the foreground, all that, it's very atmospheric. Those are the two most atmospheric ones of the bunch to me, so those are the ones that I really, really like the most. I mean, they're all good. All four are solid posters, but those were the two that stood out.
Alrighty. Yeah, my favorite is Batman Hush, so I'm going to agree with you on that one. That might be a little bit, because I might have a little bit of bias there, because that's the one I'm most looking forward to in terms of the movies. Mm. But also, I mean, Gotham City, just it looks so cool in the poster. And then the bats, I mean, that's just iconic. So, yeah, that one is my favorite. But I want to point out something about the Reign of the Superman one that I think is really cool. I love that, like, because you think if Superman were still alive, like, this poster, I feel like, would have, like, a red streak flying through the sky, a red blur, I should say, for the Smallville reference.
Yeah.
But because it's not, like, there's something like the absence of Superman in this poster, like, there's something that's very powerful about that, because it's obviously this movie's following up the death of Superman. So I think there's something to be said about that in this poster. The absence of Superman creates this sort of chill in the poster that, you know, if that makes sense. I don't know.
I mean, that makes sense. I get it, yeah.
Cool. Alrighty. So, yeah. Cool posters. Getting us even more pumped for the next year's slate of DCU AOM releases. Well, moving into our TV news then, though, we have news that, first off, Diane Guerrero has been cast as Crazy Jane in Doom Patrol. She is going to be a series regular. It looks like she's not going to be the one of the Doom Patrol members who's appearing in the Doom Patrol episode of Titans, but that she'll later be joining them, you know, on their own show. I'm not familiar with this actress, but I am very intrigued to see what she brings to this role, because this is going to be a very intriguing character to see how they bring her to life in live action. This is going to be very interesting to see how they do this. So, I am excited.
Yeah, I mean, solid casting. I think, you know, she was in Orange is the New Black, right?
There's a tie there to our next piece of news.
Yeah, we'll get to that. And so that's a very well spoken of show. And so, but aside from that, I really don't have much experience with the actress, so I can't comment on that. But again, I'm always... Unless it looks and sounds egregiously stupid, you know, like when they were rumoring back in the day, you know, Ashton Kutcher is Superman, which is all kinds of no, you know.
I would have been open to that.
Well, of course you would, but I think it would have been a stupid. Well, how about Justin Timberlake? You like that one? Because that was a rumor too. Does that make sense?
I would have been open to that too.
Oh, you're crazy. But anyway.
More so Ashton Kutcher, though, just because of how much I love Two and a Half Men.
Yeah, no, I'm not a fan of Ashton Kutcher. I think he's a mediocre actor at best.
did you not like him on Two and a Half Men?
Once Charlie Sheen left Two and a Half Men, the show died, because he was the show. And to me, anything after that is non-existent.
Oh, Adam.
and I'm sorry, Justin Timberlake should not be acting. That's my stance on it. But so unless it's an egregiously out there ridiculous, you know, choice like those two, I'll pretty much give the casting directors the benefit of the doubt because I wasn't in the room. I wasn't there for the audition. So, and I got nothing, not much of a basis to go on with this particular actress. So I'll go with it. And, again, I'm not overly familiar with the Doom Patrol, so I'm excited for this show really to give me a basis of knowledge of the characters and a more.
Did you read the Batman: The Brave and the Bold issue?
I want to, but I also want to go in fresh and let the shows give me a basis of information and then do a deep dive in things. So I'm not sure. I have it. I haven't decided whether I'm going to read it yet or not. I will read it. I will read it eventually. I just don't know if it'll be now or after the first episode of Titans that they appear. Right. So,
okay.
So that's where I am with that. So I'm excited. Again, the more content on the streaming service, which I'll hopefully eventually be able to pay for, because you know I want to give Warner Bros. My money, but they're still not letting me yet. And yes, that is going to be my go-to complaint until they actually let me pay for it. So just to let everybody know, expect rants on that whenever I can or whenever Jordan brings up the streaming service. So
wherever I what?
Whenever you bring up something on the streaming service. So, yeah, I'm down with it. I look forward to seeing what she brings to the table.
Cool, cool. Well, I'm right there with you. Moving on to some more casting news, and it ties into the last casting news because another alum from Orange Is the New Black has been cast in a DC role, and that would be Ruby Rose being cast as Batwoman, of course, first to appear in the big Arrowverse crossover this year and then to star in her own series, which is in development. I'm not familiar with Ruby Rose either. However, I will be very soon because I am eagerly anticipating the movie The Meg that she is in. But as of now, I don't have any experience with her. But I'm very excited to see what she brings to the role as Batwoman. I cannot wait to see Batwoman finally in live action in first the crossover and then her own show. So, yeah, Bat-tastic news here, even though I'm not familiar with the actress. And, yeah, I am extremely excited to see what she brings to the role.
Well, yeah, okay, so a couple of things. First of all, I'm very excited about this this casting. Several reasons. One of which is, you know, one of the elements that is core to the character of Batwoman is that the character is a lesbian. And Ruby Rose is openly gay. She's come out. She said, you know, that's who she is. And again, I think it's first of all obvious on the studio and the network's point of view to cast a lesbian actress. I think it's the right thing to do. And if it's part of the core of a character, you should try your hardest to cast an actor that is of that persuasion, because I think it lends, you know, an air of authenticity. And think about it, when they step into a role, they would have a lot more, you know, not to say that an actor would half-ass it either way, but that's not what I'm saying, but I think they're going to put more intensity and more care into the role because they know they're portraying, you know, something for their group that may not be prevalent. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's a great. I would have been a little bit disappointed in the studio had they gone out and got a straight actress for this role. To me, it would have been a letdown. So I'm glad they went ahead and got Ruby. In terms of Ruby herself, I've seen her in she had a great fight scene in John Wick 2. That was great, and I know she did the fight scene because she was an amateur boxer. She's taken up training, martial arts kind of training, so you know she can fight, which is also cool, because Batwoman, if you've read or seen her in Batman Bad Blood, you'll know that she's a badass fighter. So it's cool that Ruby Rose can hold her own in that. I have not seen the Meg yet, but I've also, in addition to the John Wick fight scene, I've also seen her in the Triple X sequel, the Return of Xander Cage or whatever. And people could say what they want about that movie. I enjoyed it as a guilty pleasure, and I liked her role in it. And the other thing that I find intriguing about this casting and this choice is that it's nice that with the Arrowverse shows, for the first time, it seems like in a long time to me that one of the core, a core casting member, like a lead role, has not come from either Glee or has not appeared previously on the CW. And that's not a knock against any of the cast members on the Arrowverse that we've gotten from Glee or previous CW shows, because, you know, one of the things that I'm optimistic about is that whenever they've cast a lead, one of the lead, you know, say what you will about how some characters are written, etc., etc., the casting of the leads in the Arrowverse shows has been very solid. So it's not when I say that, it's not a detriment to the fact that they've come from Glee or the fact that they've come from past CW shows. What I'm saying is, it's a nice change up that one of the leads of their potential new series when it gets going is not, because it's gotten predictable where you're thinking of a casting choice, you think, well, I'll just pick somebody from Glee or from a past CW show. And they went against their own grain here and went and found somebody that has both television and film experience. So I think it's really cool in that regard. And it's worth pointing out that Ruby Rose is 32, so it's not somebody in their early to mid 20s, which is another outside of the grain aspect of the casting from the CW's point of view. Two things I want to point out that I noticed that are pretty cool. Ruby Rose has a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle tattoo, specifically Leonardo, and that makes her awesome. I just want to point that out. So she's a geek like we are, and I appreciate that. The second thing is she was recently on, I don't know if you've seen this, Jordan, but she was on Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, I saw it. Jimmy Kimmel.
Was it Jim? Yeah, sorry, Jimmy Kimmel.
Was it Kimmel? No, it was Jimmy Fallon. No, it was Jimmy Fallon.
No, it was Fallon. Yeah.
It was Fallon.
And obviously,
if it was Jimmy Kimmel, though, it would have been better, because that would have been Batwoman and Batman from Teen Titans Go to the Movies. It would have been.
I see that, but yeah, no, but it was Fallon, and obviously she talked about, you know, being excited because you know, portraying a lesbian character. It was basically, she said a variation of what she said it more eloquently than I did, but basically what I said is that, you know, when we brought up this news, but then she brought up a point apparently, and I didn't know this, but Jimmy Fallon brought up a point that currently, whenever she can, Ruby Rose goes to hospitals to visit sick children, and one of the things that excited her about landing the Batwoman part is now she can go to the hospital and make those visits dressed as Batwoman. And that was something that was important to her. And to me, this is wonderful, because at the end of the day, I'm sure the constant paycheck is going to be nice. But at the end of the day, to hear somebody say that and to go out of their way to point that out, that she wants to dress up for kids that are ailing and go to those visits, at the end of the day, put all the other stuff aside. That's what it's about, putting a smile on kids' faces. And so she won me over with that line of dialogue alone. That quote won me over. How, if you're part of the fan community and after hearing that, you are not rooting for her to succeed, there is something wrong with you. So I'm just over the moon. And I can't wait. I think everything involved, because, you know, the whole appealing to the gay and lesbian community, all that stuff. Her being a fan, I think she's going to deliver a killer performance, and I can't wait.
Right there with you. She also told a very funny story on that interview about she used to make cardboard bat wings as a kid.
Yeah.
And now she was going to have a lot better a class.
For sure. And I can't actually. I'm excited to see what the costume looks like.
Oh, yeah. I think the Arrowverse has killed it with their costumes up to this point. So I'm really excited to see their first bat suit, I guess, that we've ever seen in the Arrowverse. So that is very exciting.
Yeah.
All righty.
Well, if they get the costume designer who did the Batgirl outfit from Birds of Prey, I'm down, because that thing
that suit was awesome.
That thing was a masterpiece, and
that would be awesome. Alrighty. Well, moving on. More Doom Patrol casting, actually, which is we have our cyborg in Doom Patrol, and he will be played by and I might be butchering this name, at least the first name, but Joyvon Wade is going to be playing
cyborg. I think it's Jovian, but I could be wrong.
I don't think it's Jovian, because the I comes before the V.
Okay, I don't know then. Who knows what the hell his name is?
So, I don't think it's Jovian.
Who the hell knows what his name is? But,
but anyway, he will be playing Cyborg. He's another actor that I am not familiar with, but I am extremely excited to see, nonetheless, in the role. I will say he's got a lot to live up to, because Lee Thompson Young and Ray Fisher were both so phenomenal in the role. But I am extremely excited to see what he brings to the role as well, and I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I know he's from Doctor Who. That's the most that I know him from. Aside from that, I don't have a basis. But again, I'm excited to see this iteration of Cyborg and see him interact with the Doom Patrol and hopefully eventually the Titans. So yeah.
Booyah.
Listen, if they can translate Cyborg's look the way Titans has translated Robin's, then that's going to look amazing. So I can't wait.
Oh yeah. You think we will get a booyah out of him?
They probably work it in at some point.
I hope so. I mean, we got it in Justice League, so.
I want to know which character he's going to tell off. That's what I want to know.
You want to know what character what?
Which character he's going to tell to F off. That's. I'm far more interested in that than I am.
Oh, my goodness. All righty. Well. Moving on.
Oh, you know what? Maybe he could. You know, when we see him eventually interact with the Titans, he could deliver a message from Batman to Robin saying, "Batman knows what you said," and he tells you to F off right back. I don't know.
Oh my goodness.
God.
Anyway, moving on to our movie review, a movie that Cyborg is actually in. Yeah. So that's cool. Which would be Lego DC Super Heroes Aquaman Rage of Atlantis, the latest DC film to be released. Came out on July 31st, so we're getting this to this a couple weeks late, just because for the sole reason that we had three DC movies released back-to-back-to-back with The Death of Superman and Teen Titans Go to the Movies, and then this the very next week, which was just incredible. So we've got this movie now. And I, for one, am really excited to talk about this. I haven't heard your thoughts yet, Adam. But I guess we'll start with the IMDb description. So you can go ahead and guess whether it's going to be one sentence or two sentences, Adam.
Yeah, I have no faith anymore. One sentence.
The death of Superman broke your faith in IMDb, didn't it?
What's that?
I said the death of Superman description ruined your faith in IMDb, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it really, really just killed it.
All righty. Well, this one, you are right. It's one sentence, so you did get it right. And that would be, Aquaman must battle foes in the air, on land, and in the depths of the seven seas, along with some help from the Justice League to save the day. And actually, I'll say this description, I like that it is actually very accurate. And one thing I like about this is something that stands out to me about this movie is the way that partially, and you know what, let's just go ahead, spoiler warning, dropping it right now.
Yeah, get over
spoiler warning.
We're spoiling this shit, yeah.
Over the spoiler wall. Yeah. Cool. So one thing I really like about the description that I think is very accurate is that this film very much is part undersea adventure, but then part of it is a space adventure as well, which is very cool. And that scene, actually, the scene where they're in space and they go to the watering hole, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that scene, Adam. It reminded me of that Justice League episode Comfort and Joy, which is actually my favorite episode of Justice League, where Jon Stewart and Shiera go to the alien bar and they get in that bar fight. So that scene, the scene with the Justice League at the watering hole in space, that reminded me of that.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, as being, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a very, it's a very good... good pull.
Thank you. Thank you. So, yeah, I just thought I thought it was interesting how this film was sort of – it was part undersea adventure and part space adventure with that. In terms of the undersea stuff, my goodness, Adam, how awesome did Atlantis look in Lego form?
Yeah, that's one of the things. First of all, in case you wouldn't know my general thoughts.
Sure, sure.
I was entertained by this movie. There was I know there was one of the Lego movies that I really didn't care for. Not the superhero girl one, the other one. There was one that I was harsh, very harsh on. I can't remember which one it was.
And we reviewed it on this show?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I can't.
The only other one we reviewed on the show, other than the DC Superheroes one, was Lego DC Superheroes The Flash.
Okay, then I'm thinking of something else then. But anyway. But I enjoyed this one. I was entertained. One of the highlights for me was the depiction of Atlantis. It looked fantastic, really beautiful. Yes. and again, when I see stuff like this, I'm constantly amazed at what they can do with animation in Lego form.
The only thing missing from Atlantis in this was that there's no Froyo.
Wow. Yeah.
Much to Cyborg's dismay.
Chagrin, yeah. the other interesting point is that they made a point of saying the trident, right, was in the stone. So it was a piece of stone. What was it? A piece of stone?
No. It was in a statue.
Yeah, it was in the statue. Yeah. And they what my point was, they were trying to make the analogy of the King Arthur story, the sword and the stone,
Cyborg even brought it up, and Aquaman didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah, but I think it's a cool analogy to make, because I think the King Arthur story and Aquaman share a lot, aside from the character being Arthur and being a king, they do share a lot in common. So I did like the reference. Mm-hmm. But Atlantis looked amazing. Yeah, no doubt about it, for sure.
That first scene when they go down, it reminded me of the scene from the Aquaman trailer, actually, when they're in Jessica's construct and they go down and you see Atlantis, and they have that first musical number, which was really cool, where they're, welcoming them to Atlantis, which was
the musical numbers were part of my least favorite things. I'm not a musical fan, so whenever I get that, I'm not impressed, and I wasn't impressed here. But in terms of Atlantis itself and that moment, it did call to – or the moment preceding the musical, it did call to mind the moment from the trailer.
Yeah.
I thought they really. I did like the pairing of Ocean Master and
Atrocitus.
Their pairing made sense. And you know the fact that I guess in a way. I mean, predominantly Atrocitus was using Orm and sort of, you know, but to a lesser degree, unknowingly, I think they were using each other in the sense that Orm wanted control of Atlantis, mm-hmm. and he used Atrocitus to get it.
Hey, don't call him Orm, Adam. He doesn't like to be called Orm. He wants to be called only Ocean Master.
Yeah, well, that's going to get redundant if I keep saying Ocean Master, so he can suck it up. Too bad. But then, you know,
and definitely Adam, do not call him Ormy because he definitely does not like that.
So, I mean, it was more, the using was definitely more on Atrocitus' side, but I think to a degree, they were both using each other, to achieve their ends. What I was surprised and what actually worked, and this is why they work for me. I'm very particular about when and how they use Aquaman-related jokes. It's a very sore subject for me.
I remember you were really worried about that based on the trailer.
Yeah. What I think they did well was use the jokes to affect the plot in the sense that they weren't just making jokes to make fun of Aquaman, but it's like the jokes were used to allow as sort of evidence that Ocean Master could use against Aquaman to say, look, how can we have this guy as a king if he's a laughingstock of the surface world, right? But then also those jokes later on become motivation for Aquaman to change his perception by, you know, defeating both Ocean Master and Atrocitus, right? So that becomes his driving sort of, one of the driving motivations to sort of take up the fight and man up and, you know, become the hero that a king should be, right? So,
well, yeah, I love how his arc, sort of, I wouldn't know if I, I'm not sure I would call it his arc entirely, but sort of the general storyline of this movie of him, at the beginning of the movie, he's sort of made a joke of, and he gets embarrassed by Lobo, which we later find out was orchestrated by Ocean Master. But I love that his arc in this movie is he starts out at the beginning and everybody's sort of making fun of him and sort of dismissing him, like, oh, you've got an overly specialized skill set and all that. But then by the end of the movie, they realize his value. Everybody comes to realize his value to the Just League. He's the one at that bar scene I was talking about. He's the one who stands up to Lobo. He's the one who saves them. He calls in the plankton. He's the one who saved the Just League at the end. So he's the one who really, I mean, there's even a scene where Batman points out all the things he's done to help them. And so I think that sort of in this, over the course of the movie, they show how much value he has to the Just League. And I really love that.
Yeah. So I like that the jokes were used, you know, in two very specific ways. And it wasn't just, let's make fun of Aquaman for the sake of making fun of Aquaman. Mm-hmm. So those worked. I think there were two characters to me that this movie got spot on, 100%. And those were Jessica Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Like they, you know, the varying quality aside, the Lego movies managed to nail the Jessica Cruz in the sense of her anxiety, and that aspect of the character, they get it right. Obviously, they couch it in a certain way that's acceptable to kids, but they get it. But they do get it spot on.
That scene where Aquaman's trying to convince her to go through the sea gate, and And she's like, oh, but there could be judgments on the other side, and everybody could be judging me. And then he's like, there's a 1 million to 1 chance of that. And she goes, and she does the whole dumb and dumber thing with Jim Carrey, and she goes, yeah, so you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah. So, but they get, but you know what I'm saying? How they really understand and portray her anxiety as well, even though, like I said, it's geared towards children.
Yeah, and then I love seeing her at the end of the movie overcome those goes to save Batgirl and Robin.
Well, I think, I know Aquaman gets the thing at the end, but you know, the moment at the end. But I think this movie works better in terms of I think it's better as a Jessica Cruz story than it is Aquaman story. Like she got even more of the hero moment. Like her hero moment, I thought was more impactful than Aquaman's. Just my personal opinion, but.
Well, I loved Aquaman's too, so I'm not sure I would agree there. But I will say that she is definitely, she's the co-lead of this movie, pretty much, or maybe not co-lead, but like Aquaman's still the lead, but she's like the. She's like the second main character. Yeah. She's like the second most prominent character.
For me personally, I think they pulled off her hero moments better than Aquaman's. But that's just me.
I wanted to point out something before we move, because you brought up the Seagate.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to point out about that, did that remind you of the transporter portals that they have on Supergirl? The episode in season 2, like that they used it for when like they went to the Red Sun planet, like they do here. Did that remind you of that?
It did, but it also reminded me more of the show Stargate. And the name is sort of a nod to Stargate as well. Seagate, Stargate, you know. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. As someone who's not familiar with that show, yeah, that didn't occur to me. So, okay, yeah. Cool.
And as a fan of Stargate, I appreciated the reference. So there's that. But I also see what you're saying, but I got more of a Stargate vibe, but yeah, that was just because I have more familiarity with the show. What else did I enjoy before I go?
Well, you were saying there was another character. You said there was another character that you wanted to point out that you.
Yeah, that they got spot on. That's right, they got spot on. Lobo, which considering this is a kid's movie, is hard to do. And they managed to do it. I mean, aside from ultra violence and propensity to maybe swear, I think the character's personality and traits were uncompromised.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they've got him pegged quite perfectly. So
I mean, yeah, they got the bounty hunter aspect of him. They got him being paid to just make a fool out of Aquaman, like that felt like a Lobo thing. You just take that money to do that. Like, yeah, it. I definitely agree with you there.
I wanted to get your, because as I was watching, I saw certain things and I'm like, I got to get Jordan's opinion on this.
Okay.
Seeing as how you didn't like the coochie-coochie, you know, beware the bat rub moment. In the Flash point or the Flash Lego movie, What is your take on the whole, you know, the bat burp?
I thought it was hilarious. I'm not gonna lie, I thought it was hilarious. I love that bat burp scene, cracked me up. And the whole one of my favorite parts of this movie was the whole running joke about the utility belt, starting from the point where Jessica calls it. She's like, oh, your cute little belt thing, you can't help us. And Batman just turns her and he's like fuming. And all the other, just like Superman and Wonder Woman, are like, oh no, you did not just say that. Yeah. And then Batman turns to her and he's like, it is a utility belt. It is not a cute little belt thingy. He starts doing stuff with it. And then he's like, would a cute little belt thingy do that?
Yeah, and then I think Cyborg said, I think it would.
Yeah.
But, okay, here's the thing. I like that joke.
Uh-huh.
I think it ran on a little too long at one point. At one point, I'm like, all right, we get it. So I think they might have stretched it a little too far. But the joke was good. I think it just went on too long. Just my
the part of the joke where he pulls out, he gets this new costume, which I loved his new costume in this too. I mean, I love his old costume because, like, I can't remember which one of the Lego DC Superheroes movies it was in where they got their new 52 inspired costumes. So for most of this movie, Batman's wearing something very similar, like a Lego-wise version of his new 52 costume. But then he switches temporarily to a yellow oval costume, which I thought was just awesome.
Yeah.
But there's a joke where I think I can't remember who asked him, but they're like, how did you fit that in your little belt thingy? And anyway, that cracked me up.
Yeah, no, like I said, I like the joke. Just for me personally, it went on a little too long at times.
Okay.
That was the only thing. One of the things that again, anytime I get to see Atrocitus, because I think he's a great villain, I enjoy it. And
bringing back Jonathan Adams to voice him.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Because, like, I mean, he did such an amazing job in the role in Green Lantern, the animated series.
Yeah, yeah.
And to bring him back here was just, I was so happy about that.
Talk about an underrated animated series, by the way. But
you know, that series is so underrated.
But
least, you know, it's a bummer we didn't get more than a season one of that, but at least we got his amazing Atrocitus voice back here. So
that's true. Yeah, it is true.
Pretty cool.
I love seeing him again. And again, even though it's a kid's movie, they managed to still make him a badass, which I appreciated.
That scene, his introduction scene, when they've got like that, I don't know how to describe the music that they played, like when he's rising up on the stage in Atlantis.
Yeah.
But it was like, I was like bobbing my head to it. I was like, oh man, this is so cool.
And then even the fact that they were able to put Dexter, you know, Dexter, I love the characters. It's such a ingenious thing. So the fact that they worked him in, I thought was cool.
And the scene where Aquaman speaks, he's like, I speak fluent fish, but I speak a little bit of cat too.
Yeah, I guess catfish. I guess that's what they were going for.
That makes sense.
That was a joke. That was a joke they were going.
But then the way they defeat Dexter too.
with the
mouse. Yeah.
There were a couple of things I had problems with, though.
Okay.
One of the issues I have with all these Lego related movies, or at least now the third that we're touching on, the third in continuity one we're touching on, is that they make
second in this continuity that we're touching on.
Oh, right, because we did the Superhero Girls, which is not connected.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so the second. Of these two, it seems to me that they are intent on making Superman a doofus. And I don't particularly like that portrayal.
When do you think he was? I didn't think he was a doofus.
He acts like a doofus. The whole, almost everything that comes out of his mouth. I don't like this portrayal of Superman in either of these movies.
Okay, but you got to like Nolan North reprising his role.
The voice is fine. I got zero problem with the voice. I just don't like the way they portray him.
It just gets me even more hype for Young Justice season 3 to have Nolan North.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
And the other character that seems more of a, that always ends up being a background character in both of these movies and doesn't really get much, I mean, she has one small scene, but where she uses the lasso or whatever, but Wonder Woman, I think Wonder Woman is another one that's poorly represented in these two movies. So, Those are two characters that I'm not fond of the portrayal in this Lego universe. That really,
she had a really cool fight scene with, I think, Dexter in this movie that I really liked.
Yeah, I think what turned me off was it was that stupid scene where she's unconscious.
Well, that was in the trailer.
Yeah, but and I didn't like it then. And it contributes to Superman. I think she might be unconscious or whatever he said. Did he say, I think she's fine, or I think she might be unconscious?
No, well, it's Batman who drops down and says, Wonder Woman has been knocked silly. And then Superman goes, are you sure? How do you know? And then Wonder Woman blabbers about something.
Yeah, she does that stupid blabbering thing. Yeah, so that moment between her and Superman just rubbed me the wrong way. I didn't care for it. So those were two things that didn't agree or sit well with me, rather. And the other one I kind of touched on is, I think, ultimately, I think Jessica Cruz got a bit of a better set of hero moments than Aquaman did. And for me, it should always be the other way around. Aquaman should have gotten more of the impactful key moments, because I think, like I said, at the end of the day, I think Jessica Cruz's hero's journey, if you will, got paid off a little bit better than Aquaman's, or not better, but stronger, I would say. So those are my negatives, but it was, you know, for the most part, I had fun with this, and I love the world of Atlantis that they exposed us to. The Arthurian mythology was they tied it into the, you know, the King Arthur story a little bit. That was cool. Batman being the one that vouched for him and say, no, he's useful, he does this, this, and that. Because I think coming from Batman, you know, because if you think about it, who would be one to criticize him or kind of snark at him would be Batman, but he doesn't. In fact, he gives him the props, right? So
yeah.
That was important.
That's why Batman's the smartest.
The other negative that I
the running joke with Batman where he keeps having to re-enter stuff.
That was funny.
That cracked me up.
But I think that speaks more to Aquaman's mysteriousness and to a greater extent the mysteriousness of Atlantean culture and Atlantean society. And that's a clever way to sort of work it in. The other negative that I kind of had was. At the dinner when Cyborg is making all those fish jokes. See, that's where I don't like it, because
cracked me off.
But that's more making fun of than contributing to the story and sort of contributing to the character's overall arc and sort of overcoming that. That's going backwards, so I didn't care for that.
When Cyborg said he wished he had lobster, and then he realized that a lobster serving him the food, that had me die.
Yeah, see, those were the jokes I didn't like. So, but overall, like I said, I had a general fun with it, and I there was more to enjoy than there was not to enjoy. So, overall, I was pretty happy with this one. Anything you want to add specifically that we may have missed?
Oh yeah. The joke about it was a really cool nod with Rebirth, where he's like, this stuff.
Oh, the Rebirth stuff, yeah.
Area,
yeah.
This stuff used to be located at Area 52, but now they've relocated to Rebirth, New Jersey. That was such a great.
That was a very nice continuity nod. I really did like that. Yeah.
That was awesome. Getting Susan Eisenberg to voice Mara. That was really cool to see her in a different DC role.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that was, I think, and she did, like, she sounds very different as Mara. Like, she really made it a very distinct role, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
She did a great job. I mean, that was great. And then that scene with the fishy, that Aquaman was, like, obsessed with Mara's fishy. that cracked me up when Mara kept making her hard water, and then Aquaman, like, first she made the fishy, and then she started making all this other stuff, and Aquaman just kept saying at her, make the fishy. Anyway, that cracked me up. And then, because, like, Mara was like, yes, here's your fishy, Arthur. Yeah. And he's like, oh, the fishy. That cracked me up. So I love that. What was it? There was another scene I was going to bring up that I thought was really, really funny, but now I am forgetting what it was. Oh, the scene at the lake basin, the dry lake basin, that was in the trailer, but that cracked me up too. It cracked me up in the movie too, where Aquaman tries to call the fish, and he's down there in the lake. He doesn't realize it's a dry lake basin. The vehicles in this movie, when they built their, I'm gonna call them skimmers, because they reminded me of the skimmers from Krypton. When all the heroes built their separate Lego skimmer things, those looked so cool.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Yeah, thanks. I thought those were very cool. Batgirl and Robin in this movie. I love that they got a chance to shine, where we got sort of going back to the IMDb description. The IMDb description talked about in the air, on land, and in the depths of the seven seas. So there was, I would say it was mostly a space adventure and an underwater adventure, but there's a little bit on land on Earth at that park, which I thought was great. First of all, it was pretty crazy seeing, because obviously Teen Titans Go to the Movies came out the week before this, and getting Scott Menville as Dick in that movie, and then a week later as Damien in this movie. Anyway, that was kind of odd to hear, sort of an odd transition, but I love him as both Dick and as Damien, and I thought he was great in this movie. Great to hear him again. And Alison Stoner reprising her role as Batgirl from Young Justice. So, you know, getting two Young Justice actors back in this movie in their respective roles. Nolan North as Superman, and Alison Stoner's Batgirl, just like I was saying, with Nolan North as Superman, just getting me even more hype for Young Justice, hearing both those actors reprising their roles from Young Justice in this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that I thought was awesome. What else? I'm trying to think what else in this movie that I loved. Because if you can't tell already, I love this movie. But do you have anything else to bring up, Adam, while I think about it?
No, I think I'm pretty good. I got everything in that I wanted to say. You reminded me of the New 52 Rebirth moment, which we touched on. So yeah, I think I'm good. I think I can go. If you can't think of anything else.
Oh, the scene at the bar. Going back to that scene, because I love that scene where Aquaman is talking to the bartender, and the two robots are trying to punch him the whole time, and he's ducking out of the way.
Yeah, and then there's the moment where he's unknowingly kicking ass.
Yeah,
that was kind of cool. Yeah.
That was great, and the whole joke with Aquaman being like the way they use him as a compass to direct, as a divining rod to direct them to the water, that was great. Ooh, the Batman and Robin nod with the Bat credit card. I was howling laughing at that.
The best part was the Batman was almost ashamed of it, which is like you could see on his when he takes it out, he's like, oh, you know, he has that sigh, that kind of reaction, and I'm like, wow. Well, that's all right. I agree with his reaction, so I'm good with this.
Well, the reaction, I think, was to him having to pay for everybody's drinks because they're always looking at him.
Well, you could take it that way, but in my mind, I'm taking that as an admission that that moment in the movie sucked. In Batman and Robin, it did suck. And so, to me, that is a acknowledgement by the writers and directors of this movie. So, yeah. So I'll go with it. But
the whole thing with going back to Jessica, the whole thing with her trying to unlock the mute button on her ring, that was pretty funny. I dug that.
Yeah.
Was that?
Yeah. No. That was cool stuff.
The straw at the end of the movie, the slurp as it was called, that reminded me, you won't get this because it was in Teen Titans Go to the Movies. For any of the listeners who have seen Teen Titans Go to the Movies, I'll bring this up, which is that the whole joke about the acronym being slurp, it reminded me of the joke in Teen Titans Go to the Movies where Slade names his device the acronym basically stands for Doomsday, and he's trying to pass it off as being a benevolent device that's like just a streaming service, but the acronym is Doomsday, and he's like, yeah, maybe I should have picked a different name for that. So anyway, the acronym being slurp in this, it just gave me a callback to that scene. The scene where Aquaman and Orm spit on each other's hands before shaking hands, that and everybody being grossed out by that was another scene that made me laugh pretty hard. And we got an outrageous from Aquaman in this movie.
We did.
Yes. I hope it's in the live action one. I hope we get one out of Jason Momoa in the live action one. That was awesome. I'm trying to think. Once I had a chance to think some more, once you talked some more, I was able to think of a lot more. But I think that covers most of the point.
All right, so let's go ahead and rate this thing. What is your grade for it?
my grade for this movie is going to be an A-. I love this movie. I thought it was just a blast. I loved seeing Atlantis in Lego form. I loved there was a lot of comedic moments in this that just really worked for me and really got a good laugh out of me. I love, obviously, with Batman being my favorite character, he did have a heavy presence in this, and I loved him in the movie. I love the mixture of the undersea stuff and the space adventure, some of the Easter eggs, like I pointed out with the New 52 Rebirth one, that I really enjoyed. So yeah, overall, I just thought this movie was a ton of fun, and, yeah, A-.
All right. I'll give it a solid B+. On my end. Yeah. Like I said, I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was based on the trailer. And there's more fun to be had than groan-worthy moments. So, all in all, that's my grade for it.
Alrighty. Cool. Well, in that case, I guess we will move on to our Batman Animated Series review for this episode, which is the episode Be a Clown. And we got our you know what? Let me go back. I've been meaning to call out, and I think I've forgotten for the past few episodes to call out of everything we talk about the directors and writers, and I've been meaning to call those out.
Oh, of the Aquaman.
Yeah, so I'll call it because I was about to call out for Batman TAS, and then I was like, oh wait, I forgot to call it out for Aquaman. So directed by Matt Peters and written by Jeremy Adams and Jim Krieg. Jim Krieg, I should point out, I believe he was one of the showrunners of Green Lantern, the animated series. So he was the one who was able to convince Jonathan Adams to come back for this movie.
Could
but,
be.
But he also wrote Batman Gotham by Gaslight, which we all know how much I adore that movie. Also, Jeremy Adams, he's written, I believe he wrote one of the Superhero Girls ones. I'm not looking at either of these guys' IMDb pages right now, so I apologize if I'm getting some of this wrong. I'm just going off memory by some of their past work. And I think he's done some writing for Just League Action, too. So thought I'd shout them out. I thought, because I thought they did a great job with this movie. So only fair to call them out, and that's something I've been meaning to do. So I apologize for forgetting on the past few episodes, I think, to call out directors and writers for everything we talk about. But, wanted to do it here for this. So I also, of course, will point it out for Batman Animated Series. For the episode Be a Clown, that's what I was about to do when I remembered to do it for Lego DC Super Heroes Aquaman Raid of Atlantis. This episode directed by Frank Parr and written by Ted Peterson and Steve Hayes. So, anyway, Be a Clown. Now we can move into our IMDb description. And you think in one sentence or two sentences?
Adam? Oh, definitely one. No question.
Adam, you're never going to believe this. Three sentences.
Wow.
I guess it was sort of unfair for me to say one sentence or two because because it was three. So you didn't.
All right, we'll change it to one sentence or more from now on. All right.
Okay, one sentence or more.
Even though that more is going to be a few and far between.
This is a rarity. This might be the first time it's ever been three sentences. But here we go. An offhand remark by Mayor Hill on television spurs the Joker into sneaking onto his estate disguised as a clown at the birthday party for Hill's son, Jordan. Joker plants a bomb, but Bruce Wayne, who is attending the party, manages to defuse it. However, Jordan, who is angry at his father, runs away hiding in Joker's van. And I've got to shout out Crouch BK for this description. So Crouch BK, nice job on doing the longest IMDb description we've ever gotten.
Yeah. They should give him an award of some kind for all the hard work he put into that. And I'm not joking. I'm being serious.
You might be serious, but I'm still laughing.
Yeah.
But yeah, we can get into this episode now. I don't know where you wanted to start. Spoilers.
All spoilers, but I really like this episode quite a bit, actually. To me, one of the things that I seem to notice is that especially with the animated series. Whenever Batman is rescuing anything involving a child, I think he gets more what's the word I'm looking for?
It's personal for him in a
way. Yeah, he's more ferocious. He's more determined, and I think that comes from the fact that, you know, his experiences as a child. I think so.
That's a great point, because his whole mission was, you know, to make sure that what happened to him never happened to anybody else, and to him and his family, I should say. And obviously that's more sort of a general thing, like, you know, fighting crime in general. But I think it's even more when it is specifically something that, you know, there's some sort of parallel to his situation, you know, with a child being in danger, with a child's parents being in danger. I think that makes it even more personal for Batman. Reminds me of the amazing scene from Justice League Dark. I'll go ahead and bring this up. The scene in Justice League Dark where Batman saves the child but isn't able to save the child's mother. And it's at the beginning of that movie. It's my favorite scene in the movie. And Batman just looks at it. It's this little infant that he saved. And he just looks at the child once he realizes the child's mother has fallen off the ledge and he wasn't able to save her. He just looks at the child and says, "I'm sorry," because he failed in his mission in that instance. Yeah. And so whenever it's a situation similar to that with a, you know, child or parents, you know, I think it's even more personal for him. So I totally agree with that sentiment, Adam.
Yeah. And, you know, the Joker posing as a clown, you know, is on the nose, but it works. But also, you know, the whole idea of why he went to these lengths in the first place, all because the mayor compared him to Batman.
Yep.
Like, made a comparison. So it shows.
It's very Joker.
Well, it's very Joker, but it's also very crazy, which fits the Joker, right? So.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah.
So there's that. The other thing that really stood out and why Batman would sort of identify with this kid is because this kid may have his father, may have a ton of friends, at a party. Okay, the party was orchestrated by his father, but still, so he's got his father, he's got whatever. But if you track, you know, Jordan's moments throughout the episode, he's very lonely, and at that same age, Bruce Wayne must have been very lonely as well. So
that's the thing about this episode. You said he had his father and he had his friends, but his father, I mean, Hamilton Hill in this episode is not very likable.
No, I'd say he's not a good father. I'm saying he has his father alive, which is the difference between him and Bruce Wayne.
And speaking to that, though, I mean, what that results in, though, is it's not Jordan's friends that are at that.
His father's friends and their kids. Yeah.
Exactly, which is the problem.
So even if he has his father living, the connection with a similar childhood feelings being, you know, they were, of how Bruce Wayne must have felt is definitely present.
And I love the fact in this episode, I was going to bring it up later, but you brought it up, which is the fact that the kid's name is Jordan. And, you know, I just, from a personal standpoint, I love that about this episode.
Yeah. I can
imagine. It's like I'm getting saved by Batman when I watch the episode.
Yeah, well, there you go. but no, it's cool. But and the other part that I really liked was the aspect that we got to see Bruce Wayne play that sort of character, that billionaire playboy in moments, you know, when the Joker attacks, right?
Yes. When he tries to stop the bomb from defusing, and he's like playing it off like he's clumsy.
Yeah,
and
so we get, yeah.
Maybe he took a, first of all, maybe he took a nod from Clark there. But actually, he hasn't met Clark yet in this continuity.
Yeah.
But Anyway, I just in my head canon, I just think about that. Actually, maybe he has, because there was a Batman the Batman Adventures tie-in comic that actually, it's not technically canon because it was later retconned by the Superman animated series episode World's Finest, but they actually met in that comic before Superman had appeared on screen in the DCAU. Yeah. So if that comic had come out before this episode, I don't think it had, because this episode is very early in the show's run, then technically maybe you could say Bruce had met Clark by this point. But in any case, I like that, and I love how it's sort of Bruce, it's an example, and Bruce does this. I mean, we've seen him do this many times before, where he's such a skilled fighter and so skilled at this that he can play, he's so good that he can be efficient even if he's playing it off as clumsy. Like, he can do something very skilled and play it off like he's doing it by being, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I definitely know what you're saying, but I love that we got to see that aloof persona. Mm-hmm. While in the process of also saving, lives, right? So it was cool.
Yeah.
While also doing his Batman thing, right? You could say.
Yeah.
Also, the other thing that I really liked about this episode was the setting being in the on the fairgrounds, right? Mm-hmm. Because that called to mind Killing Joke.
Yep. For me. It also kind of calls to mind the movie we just reviewed.
Right, because of the Robin and
the Robin and Batgirl scene. Yeah.
But it definitely gave me Killing Joke vibes, right?
And
sort of, when Joker says, when Joker as Jekyll says, "Oh, I've been thinking about a sidekick," right? Mm-hmm. That kind of reminds me of Batman Beyond: Return of the Joker with what he did to Robin. That quote kind of gave me echoes to that.
Well, really, you should say Batman Beyond: Return of the Joker gave you echoes to this.
What I'm saying.
Sure. But speaking to that, Adam, I'll bring up something else though that it is reminiscent of, or that in the same situation, because this is something that came out after this episode. But the episode of The Batman, The Apprentice, which is episode 10 of season 3, where the Joker recruits Donnie, who's one of Barbara's schoolmates, as his apprentice in that episode. So I would say, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but perhaps The Batman took some inspiration from this episode.
Yeah, could very well be. Overall, I really, really enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, I am with you. I'm with you. Some great Joker stuff in this episode. There's a scene where when Joker realizes that I was about to call him Donnie because of that the Batman episode I was just thinking of. But when Jordan stows away on his truck, and then once Joker discovers him, when Joker gets really mad at first, and then gets back, and like you start to hear like Hamill's Joker voice coming out, and then he goes back in his Jekyll voice to try and manipulate Jordan. I thought that was really really scary and really, really cool. Like I was saying, this episode gave us a GIF that I use, like one of my most used GIFs ever, which is the Batman thumbs up that comes from this episode. So that's pretty cool. And, Batman there watching, it sort of goes back to your point before, watching father and son be reunited, watching Jordan and Mayor Hill get reunited there.
Yeah.
That's great.
Overall, really, really good episode. So let's go ahead and give our rating for this episode. What would you give it?
I'd give it an A. I think it's an awesome Joker episode with it's got a little personal connection there for me with, like I said, with Jordan Hill's name. So that's cool. But some great Joker stuff in it. And
I totally get that personal connection because that's part of the reason I love Adam West Batman so much.
There you go. That makes sense.
Yeah. So
and, how about Adam Knight on Smallville?
Yeah, well, that I could have done without, but only because they let it drop like a stone with nothing.
They let it drop like a stone. What do you mean?
That was a half-assed way of dealing with it. They could have done so much more with the resolution of that. But anyway,
I loved it. Okay.
For me, I'd go ahead and give it an A as well. I really like this episode. Yeah.
Cool.
Good stuff.
Alrighty. Well, I guess that wraps us up for this episode, huh?
It does. It does. And before we get out of here, we have to acknowledge the fact that we are part of the Batman Podcast Network, hosted by the folks over at Batman on Film. So if you want more Batman talk, go over there and you'll have a whole sleuth of Batman podcasts to choose from. And in terms of social media plugs, Jordan, where the heck can we find you? Because it certainly isn't Twitter. So where are we looking?
Yeah, I'm still locked out of Twitter, so nothing on that front there. Well, you know, this episode won't be out for 2 weeks, so maybe
the Batman is going to start production before Jordan gets back on Twitter. Yeah.
What? Yeah. Well, hey, if I do get back on Twitter in the next 2 weeks, then that's really exciting.
But hey, listen. No,
I'm
listen.
Okay with that.
Considering that the Batman is supposed to start in the spring, at the rate it's going, it could very well look that way. So,
well, in any case, you can find me on the DC All Access app and on Instagram at BatJordan2739. I want to make an announcement, which is that I will be on three panels at Dragon Con this year, in less than a month now. Here in Atlanta, they are going to be the Phantom is a Way of Life panel, the Krypton panel, and the Gotham panel. So if you are in the Atlanta area, if you're coming to Dragon Con, I would love to see you at those panels. It's going to be a lot of fun chatting DC. So that's exciting. And I want to solicit some iTunes reviews. If you like what you're hearing from us, or if you don't, either way, it would help us out a lot. We hope you like what you hear from us, but, you know, but, it would help us out a lot if you left us iTunes review. So we'd really appreciate it. Thank you in advance.
And if you want to talk with me on social media, you can do that on Twitter at Superhero Sci-Fi. And, I look forward to chatting with you. Until our next episode though. We hope you have, depending on whether when you're listening to this, a wonderful week or a wonderful weekend. So long, everybody.
Batcat forever, from the first kiss to the last. Bye-bye.